South Africa's public healthcare system gave the world its first ever successful heart transplant at Groote Schuur Hospital in 1967. And in that same year, Parliament passed a Medical Aid Schemes Act, which laid the foundation for a separate and private system for those who are employed and can afford it. No society can ever call itself legitimately civilized if a sick person is denied medical aid because of a lack of means, warned Nye Bevan, the Welsh miner turned politician who was the Minister of Health responsible for the implementation of the NHS in Britain after World War II. With freedom dawned the need for an integration of services and equal services for all South Africans, and a new complexity was introduced. Over the years, with chronic underfunding in the public service, a population explosion, and at least two pandemics, HIV and COVID, we are left with what in itself could be described as a pandemic. And on the 15th of May 2024, just 2 weeks before the general election, President Cyril Ramaphosa, with his back against the ropes, signed the very controversial National Health Insurance into law. The ANC says it's modelled after the British NHS and will work. The opponents say it's a band-aid on the wrong place and will fail. Today, I'm joined by Action SA MP and part of the Portfolio Committee on Health in Parliament, Dr. José Letlape, to discuss where and how he feels the Act fails and to address the system and what he believes the solutions are. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us, and good morning.
Good morning.
You have lots of work over there in Cape Town, as you sit in the Portfolio Committee for Health. So we are very grateful for the time that you've decided to spend with us this morning.
Thank you for inviting me, and good morning to you and to all the potential viewers of this podcast.
Doctor, I think first off, for many people who haven't been au fait with public health and all of the various things, let's talk a little bit about your experience and how long you have been a doctor in this space and some of the fights that you've gotten into. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, where you come from, when you started in health, and why even you got into the health sector?
Well, I was born in a township called Meadowlands, and people might be familiar with removals from Sofar Town. My parents were bedroom dwellers in Sofar Town, and we moved in the 50s to Meadowlands, and I was born in a local clinic in 1959 in Nofaya, Meadowlands. Raised in Meadowlands, lived there, and went to school there till what we called Form 1. And went to boarding schools after that. I spent a year at the University of Fort Hare in 1976 when the uprisings came up, and then went to Natal from 1977 and qualified in 81. So I've been a doctor, and this is my 44th year qualified as a medical practitioner.
Wow. And spent a lot of time in public health and healthcare facilities.
In actual fact, I've been a public advocate. But I only spent time in public health with my training. I qualified in 81, worked as a houseman in Natal Spruit, went to Wits as a lecturer for 1 year and as an associate lecturer in the anatomy department, then went to Barra in 1983. And I left Barra in 1988, having trained as an ophthalmologist. I could not get a job to continue working in the public sector. So I had a choice that the minister currently reminded all young doctors that that's their choice. You can go private or live for overseas. I wasn't ready to abandon South Africa, so I stayed, went into private practice reluctantly, and made the best of the cards that I was dealt with. And in private practice, I continued being a health advocate. That's why people sometimes think I've worked in government, sometimes thought I was a government official. I was never employed in government.
But you were also part of, I think in the early days and eventually with the rollout of ARVs, part of a very big advocate for ARV rollout. You were part of Dr. Nkosazana Zuma's health inquiry in 1995. I mean, you've been in the front line.
Well, what happened was after I qualified, I was invited to join a doctor group called the South African Medical and Dental Practitioners Group, which is largely a group of general practitioners that were embattled with medical aides wanting to reduce the amount of money that they earn, wanting to give themselves discounts. So I joined that group in 1990, after I went into private practice. And that is where my advocacy work started from. So in that group called the SMDP, when the issue of national health, social health insurance came up, we were one of the few groups that were supportive of the minister in terms of the reforms that the minister wanted to do. And if the cabinet of Nelson Mandela had supported the Minister of Health at the time, Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, this healthcare system would be far, far better than what it is right now.
Well, maybe, Doc, let's take a step back to back then when Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma was the Minister of Health and when she did her big social health inquiry. 1995 already is when the conversation was happening about what universal access to healthcare needed to look like in this country. And that's the support that she didn't get from cabinet, as you say. Maybe if you take us back there a little bit, why even there was this need? Because I think a lot of people don't know, coming out of apartheid, where what healthcare looked like for many South Africans, of all races, actually, not just black South Africans.
The challenge had been about access for all citizens. The second challenge was the fact that our health system was hospice-centric, and she understood that. And she understood the fact that primary health care would be the backbone of delivery of the healthcare system. So she embarked on two things largely. One was a build program to build primary health care clinics. The second was to engage healthcare professionals that were in the primary surface that interfaced with the public. Now, for us as doctors, that was the GPs. So the plan was simple, to ensure that every citizen is assigned to a GP where possible, where a GP was available, or is attached to a clinic where a clinic was available. And that's why she did those two things. And those would be our key entry points for all citizens into the healthcare system. Not specialists, not hospitals, but primary healthcare centers and primary physician entry points, the GP practices, that would have expanded to other healthcare professionals, physiotherapists, pharmacists, psychologists, at a primary healthcare level. And that, sadly, was not supported. It also had implications because people have to remember that there's something, fights that she went in. Access to pharmaceuticals was an issue. The cost of drugs was an issue. So she took the pharmaceuticals to court for better pricing of medicines so that they should be accessible to all. So she was a visionary, but she was also a pragmatist that worked on the ground. And unfortunately, after one term, she was moved from health and went to international relations, which was a dumping ground at the time and nothing of significance. And because of who she is, she turned that ministry around. And unfortunately for us in health, we lost a capable leader.
Doctor, I think a little bit of insight from somebody within the professional, and now that you are in this role also for your party, Action SA, about this national health insurance, what it really means, because I think that there's a lot in the media about what's out there, and now that the Act has been signed, what does it mean? What does national health insurance mean? And what are we going to get, if anything?
National health insurance means creating a single pot of money for healthcare. It's not beginning to address the issues of infrastructure, of drug shortages, of no personnel, of no security, of no leadership in the healthcare centers, prioritizing human resources. It's not addressing any of those issues. It's just about creating a pot of money. Now, South Africans have to understand that our problems are not just money. Money should be the thing of last resort. We have to fix all the other things first. The wastefulness, the system that is not working, the infrastructure that is not supported, equipment that is not renewed, that is outdated, that is not modern, human resources that are not taken care of, a human resource budget that grows in the wrong places, admin, political staff, but no frontline staff. We can't employ nurses, we can't employ doctors, but we are bloated on the admin sectors. We are bloated on the admin blocks in our offices, but our pharmacies are without drugs. Those are the problems that need to be sorted out. So national health insurance is not even beginning to address any of those issues, but it's a pot of money. Now, what people have to remember about pots of money is how they become mismanaged. Road accident fund as an example. And we have never been able to manage pots of money well. NSFAS, how it is being mismanaged, how most of the money goes to board members and service intermediaries that are not necessary. You know, the concept of funding for students is important, but it's not even national. When you have a funding mechanism like NSFAS, it should be funding all students, rich, poor, black, white, for uniformity and for social cohesion.
Well,
this is what is being intended with the NHI, but we have no track record of managing funds properly. None whatsoever.
But it seems to me that a big part of the uproar that we are hearing is people are saying, you are going to mess up the private healthcare that we already pay for. And why don't you leave us alone in our private healthcare and deal with your problems in public healthcare? And then when you've sorted that out, you can worry about having one pot of money for everybody. But we know that healthcare in South Africa is not universal. Even people with medical aids often find themselves in huge debt because they're not receiving all the care that they think that they were paying for. So the system problems that you're talking about, what should we be solving? What should we be worrying about? And should government be staying out of it?
You've answered yourself that, you know, even in medical aids, people get bankrupt trying to get care because they run out of funds, okay? And let's start at the end of what you said. Government should stay out of it. No, this is all created by government. The Medical Aid run on an act of parliament. They are not like private schools where the government is not involved. There's no act of parliament that enables collection of money. People are not forced into private schools. It is not a condition of employment. For medical aid, for most people, it's a grudge purchase. It's compulsory in employment in most cases. But it is created by a statute of parliament. So medical aids are a creation of a statute of government. And if you said today, abolish the Medical Schemes Act tomorrow, the very people that are on medical aids will cry wolf, because they need that. And what that act has done was basically to become a lager for separateness. What you have done with the act of parliament is to separate the haves from the have-nots so that the haves have a separate system. Now, if you want to fix that, you don't fix that by creating a fund, another fund. If you were honest and you understood what you're doing, you would reform the Medical Schemes Act to be the basis for a national health insurance. You wouldn't create another pot when you, as a minister of health, are actually having your healthcare coming from another separate act of parliament called Parliament. People might not know that members of parliament, members of the provincial legislature, members of the judiciary have a separate act that creates a medical aid for them that is separate from other medical schemes, from the Medical Schemes Act, called PAMED, which was passed in 1975. So if you're serious, you don't create another element of a pot of money that is separate. Now, simple question. When you create NHI, who contributes and who is covered? We don't ask the simple questions. And they are not answered. When you ask, they say, Treasury will sort that out. Remember, a medical aid is a money bill. And we now have an anomaly where you have a money bill that is now an act that has been signed by the president, but has not been signed off by Treasury and Finance. So the NHI in its current form violates the basic lawmaking in the country and the laws of Parliament. It's not endorsed by Finance. It's not endorsed by Treasury. Because if they had endorsed it, they would explain to South Africans what is the pathway, how is it going to be funded? Is it going to be a tax? Is it going to be a payroll tax? Is it going to be taxing the rich? And does it cover Gogo Dlamini, who's unemployed? Does it cover Sello, who's unemployed, who's 18 and is on Nyaupe? Is he covered by National Health? Simple, basic things that are not being explained. There's a preoccupation with creating this fund when we have not been engaged, when we do not understand, when we are being sold a mirage that says, oh, you know, look at what they have in private health. By creating NHI, we will give you what they have in private health. You remember a premier saying, you know, when this act is passed, you can walk into any private clinic. Falsehoods that are being put out there for people that are desperate for a working healthcare system. Now, you have to understand that when you talk about universal healthcare, there's a place where universal healthcare is provided. And that place is called the public healthcare system. If you want universality, you fix the public healthcare system, and all of us go to the public healthcare system for our healthcare. That is where universal healthcare access resides. This is just creating a pot of money to eat. That's all.
It's a pot of money for the comrades to eat. Well, I think this is what a lot of people who are so vociferous about their anti-NHI and this new bill, but here we sit. It is now an act. It has now been signed in. You are saying we have not been adequately consulted, but in order for the legislation to go through from being a white paper, a proposal, and a white paper, and a blue paper, and a green paper, and up until the place where President Cyril Ramaphosa signs it off on his desk, there have been many steps in between.
Well, the issue is this. It is a law of parliament now. So it can't come back to the committee because it's a law that has been passed. It belongs to all of parliament. It belongs to the people of South Africa. But that will not stop us from engaging. Because what we cannot do is to create white elephants and funds that are not going to fulfill the purpose they're intended for, and intermediaries are the ones that become rich. People will tell you, when you look at the medical aid environment, the only people that smile are the handlers of the funds, not the providers of services, not the members. All members complain because their funds get exhausted. All providers complain because their bills are not paid. Procedures they do are not covered. So the only people that are smiling are the handlers of funds. The only people that will be smiling from NHI is the board that will be appointed by the minister. Mm. Now, why would you create a fund of this magnitude and not make its board to be appointed by parliament? Mm. Judges are appointed by parliament. But once you do that, it becomes a place for serious cronyism. When boards are appointed by a minister, it just becomes pure political appointments with no engagement from the rest of the citizenry.
So, Quo Vadis, here we sit now with the Act, and I think I saw a gazette a couple of weeks ago about appropriation for the NHI. So what now? What next? What can an ordinary citizen like me do? And what can the portfolio do for to move us forward? Because here we sit. This bill has now been signed into an act.
Do you remember when the state was being looted? And somebody stood up, a minister stood up and said, it's about time we connected the dots. Mm. And you then had what was called state capture. What people miss is that if you describe it properly, it was the capture of the state by the ANC. But that part gets lost. I put that as an example.
The state by the ANC when they've been voted in.
Yes, you can be voted in and not do your job. That's why we are where we are. I mean, we inherited a public healthcare system that gave the world its first heart transplant. We've destroyed it. We inherited the strongest defense force in the continent. We've destroyed it. I mean, you had a past Minister of the Defense Force and Speaker of Parliament be charged with corruption. And when you have the challenges in the DRC where soldiers are not equipped, we do not connect the dots. We say more funding. No. Corruption is destroying the SANDF. Corruption is destroying our public healthcare system. And instead of fixing the public healthcare system, you create another nest for corruption called National Health Insurance. We lost a public worker. The family of Babita Deokaran is still mourning today. Her death was in vain. She died for revealing procurement irregularities in Tembisa. Billions were lost. Billions were spent on skinny jeans. That is not being addressed. That now, what you want is more money for more skinny jeans. Now, let me take you back a little. The minister would tell you that from evaluation by the World Bank, the WHO, we are spending a lot of money on health for poor outcomes. We're spending close on 9% of GDP on healthcare. That's what the minister will say. Ask yourself a question. If we are spending 9% of GDP, why are we creating a fund to collect more money? Which means we're going to increase the percentage of GDP we're spending in health without ensuring that the 9% that we spend wisely and efficiently. That's where you should begin. What is being done with NHI is akin to saying, you've got a car that is not roadworthy. You've got a car that is with engine problems, alignment is bad, the tires are worn out. But do you know that a car without fuel is going nowhere? And your solution becomes, let's buy more petrol for this car. When what you should be doing is to be fixing the car, fixing the engine so that it stops smoking, so that it doesn't use too much petrol, so that it's efficient. And when you fix it and it's roadworthy, you can then put it, give it more money. Now, our car that is not roadworthy this time is both the public sector and the medical aids. Medical aids are public funds. They are just pooled for the wealthy. You've separated the privileged from the non-privileged. You've separated the high earners from the low earners and the non-earners. And NHI is going to begin with the low earners. So basically, it's a low-cost medical aid. But it's not looking at all the issues that need to be addressed. We've been saying to the ministry, address the issues of the health market inquiry. It's only two weeks ago that they had a press conference to discuss the challenges inside the medical aid. There's negligence here. There's indifference. And we are not connecting the dots. So if you want to build the healthcare system, if you want this car called the healthcare system to run, make it roadworthy before you give it more fuel. Make the public sector work. Make the medical aids work before you create more money for the health system.
How do we do that?
Logic. Simple. We do that.
Me, what can I do?
The way we do that is by what they started 2 weeks ago, implementing health market inquiry. And once you've done those reforms, you are then reforming the medical aid to become a national medical aid. You're not creating a new bill called HMI, so called national health. So when you come with a new bill, it becomes a repeal, a publish and repeal. To have NHI and medical aid is a dereliction of duty. It's a recklessness. It's cowardice. It's incompetence of the highest order. This should have been a replacement offering, which means you should be fixing both. There is no way you can build a healthcare system that works for all by coming out with pronouns to try and destroy the private sector. You can't do that. If you want to improve transport for citizens in this country, you don't go out and say, I'm going to destroy the taxi industry to make public transport work. You work on both. If you can't walk and chew gum at the same time, get out and let somebody else come in that can fix the healthcare system for us, that can understand that we are one, that is not going to play one against the other, but is going to take the responsibility of bringing it together and fixing it. So that at the end of the day, the aim should be, as a South African, you should be able to access your care from a public or private provider at your convenience with a common funding mechanism for both.
Do we have those people?
Oh, yes.
Do we have people that have that will?
Oh, yes. You know, when you look at South Africa, we have people that have run medical aids. We have people that have been principal officers in medical aids. We have people that have been in governance structures. We have people that have been registrars of the Council for Medical Schemes. We have a board that has been a board of the Council for Medical Schemes. The skills are there. Just look at what all the citizens have to offer. All you have to do is to work on meritocracy and not on deployment. To fix our healthcare system, we have to listen to what the international bodies are saying. Listen to what the WHO says. Listen to what the World Bank says. But look into the competences that exist among South Africans and say, how does this apply to South Africa? Don't take what they say as gospel, but take what those that are in the system tell you. We have the intellectual capacity and the knowledge to fix our system resides in many, many, many South Africans. And all you need is to open up a system and say, this is where we want to go. The key to reforming healthcare in this country is restoring the public sector to its former glory, so that all of us can access the public sector for no payment at the point of service, including me as an MP, including President Cyril Ramaphosa, including anybody on medical aid or on NHI, must choose to go to the public sector because there's quality healthcare being provided there. And if we resource the public healthcare properly, if we employ healthcare professionals, if we put equipment, if we go back to insourcing, if we support the professionals that have dedicated their lives to public service, if we resource them well, if we give them the equipment that they need, if we stop saying to them, we won't pay you well, and you can go and moonlight in the private sector, if we professionalize public service, that is where a future, a bright future lies. Now, the primary responsibility of the Minister of Health should be to fix our healthcare system, prioritizing the public healthcare system.
One of the groups of people that the minister is accountable to outside of the South Africans is Parliament. And he comes to the portfolio committee. And so what in the portfolio committee are on your list, in your agenda for allowing these things to happen and holding the minister's feet to the fire?
Remember, you already have an act that has been passed, which is unfortunate, but it's our reality. Now, we need to talk about budgets. If I were a head of state, I would ask the Minister of Health to say, you've made your point. There's an act called National Health Insurance. Until Treasury and the Finance Minister come out clearly to South Africans of how that funding is going to occur, I want you to concentrate on fixing the healthcare system that we have now. Fix public health, fix medical aids. Fix. Funding is not your duty. Funding is the duty of finance and treasury. Let them come out and inform us how this is going to work. Because anytime you ask the minister about that aspect, you get being referred to Treasury and to the Minister of Finance, who are mum on how this is going to work. And we need to be given that information. And we need to ensure that the Minister of Health is prioritizing his duty of ensuring that the current healthcare systems that we work properly and efficiently, both the public healthcare system and the medical aid healthcare system. Because that system is not private. That system is privatized. It is driven by legislation. It is under the authority of the Minister of Health.
And you sit now in the portfolio committee, and the work of the portfolio committee, besides holding the minister accountable and his team accountable, is also about legislating new bills, tabling new bills. What do you have in 2025 that you believe will shift the dial and begin to move us towards a better healthcare system for the public? Do you have anything at the moment, or are you just...
Well, there are bills that we are working on, but we have to understand that I personally and the party that I come from says when there's a problem, fix the problem. You don't need to pass a new bill. Fix the problem. Let me give you an example of a bill that we're looking at. We're looking at the tobacco bill. Okay. And the tobacco bill was amended sometime in the 90s or 2000 to change the age for smoking from 16 to 18.
Yes.
Now, there is talk of increasing that age limit to 21. And we are saying, when you cannot enforce an 18-year age limit, why are you raising the bar? When you should be improving on enforcement. So we have this issue where we think the solution is going to come from laws. We have gender-based violence. We have femicide that is driven by culture. That happens. Women are not safe at home. Women are not safe at work. Women are not safe anywhere. Instead of addressing the safety of women, instead of addressing the cultures that demean women, the practices that turn them into commodities, we create a gender-based violence cancer, a structure that needs more funding when we are not dealing with the fundamentals. This cannot be how we operate going forward. Laws should be implemented. When people, when you cannot implement what you have passed on, going into harsher laws is not going to help you. I mean, we now have a tobacco bill that's in front of us that criminalizes smoking. We said you can't smoke in public. Everybody smokes anywhere. 8-year-olds smoke. So we now want to send them to jail because we can't enforce. Take alcohol. There's a law that says no drinking in public. Go to the townships. People are having breakfast with two ngutus in the street. They're having beer for breakfast and there's no enforcement. So we need to understand that this business of thinking solutions for incompetence is in passing more laws instead of looking for meritocracy and accountability for people that have certain responsibilities is just not going to cut it going forward. So that is why we are a party that believes in meritocracy. If you can't do your job, get out. You know, I learned something from my wife in the last few days because of challenges and trying to get the company she works for to be more efficient. She coined an expression that people are busy keeping their jobs instead of doing their jobs.
I agree with her.
And what I find in government is that if you do your job, you lose your job.
Wow.
If you don't do your job and you do well to keep your job, you'll keep your job and you can even get a promotion.
Wow.
But when you do your job, you're going to lose it. I mean, and when you think about it, when Babita did her job,
she
was killed for doing her job. So in this country, if you do your job, you will lose it.
How do
or you might be killed for doing it. So you keep it by not doing it.
How do we change
that? We change that culture by asking the majority or the biggest party to change its culture. Deployment doesn't work. Once you've been elected to be a government, your duty should be to look at all the length and breadth and of South Africa to look for competency to fulfill the obligations. Meritocracy. What you cannot do is to recycle incompetence from within your midst and hope this country will work. That's all that needs to be done. And the problem is that even in the ANC that I come from. They are competent people. But competent people are overlooked. And incompetent people get appointed. Because you see, when you are incompetent, you are incapable of doing your job. And to keep it, you'll have to listen to ghost whisperers from the party. And that is the challenge that we face. And it seems to be a political culture that is not just confined to the ANC. It seems that's how politics work in this country.
So
where you don't send your best to go and become the lawmakers. Because if you send your best, the parliament would become an independent authority that serves all South Africans. If you send your worst, you can still control from the shadows. I mean, look at the debacle that we've had about an aborted budget speech. And I have no problems. As we become a maturing democracy, no one can railroad something that doesn't make sense. And we must see it as a sign of maturity that you have a parliament that will not allow things to go through that are going to harm society. We need to sort it out. 2% very harmful. But the way it was done leaves a bitter taste. Because what should have been done is that if there's a disagreement in the GNU without a timeless postponement of the assembly, the minister should have been in the house and addressed the House and said, I can't give you a budget because there's a disagreement and I'm asking for a postponement. And we collectively, as 400 MPs, would have granted that or would have voted on that. That is the procedure. But what is happening right now is the decision was made outside Parliament for Parliament. And that needs to stop. So we need, you know, For us to be accountable as a parliament, this is the first opportunity where decisions will be made in parliament because nobody has a majority. So you can't make the decision elsewhere and instruct people to act like cattle in parliament and
maybe
just vote.
Maybe that is exactly the role that the GNU is meant to be, is outside the structure,
because that's what the GNU
has allowed, a loophole into that space.
No, it's not a loophole. And don't applaud the GNU. Applaud the people of South Africa for how they voted. Because they ensured that nobody has a majority so that things can change. Majoritarianism doesn't work anywhere in the world. Because people that have majorities abuse majorities. And our constitution is about a multi-party democracy. So GNU.
Doctor, I agree with you because what the GNU has effectively done, as you point out, with what happened with Treasury and with the budget and the minister and budget, is they've appropriated that, right? So they've created this majority, and outside of the structure, they want to be able to puppeteer what's happening inside Parliament, and they have managed to do that. Particularly as we see the unfolding of what's happened with the minister and the budget. That's what they have done.
No, I look at it slightly differently. Firstly, you know, words are important and definitions are important. Our constitution does not recognize GNUs. Our constitution recognizes a multi-party democracy. And it would be helpful at some point if we saw this as a multi-party government, because nobody has a majority, not as a GNU. Okay, and when you have a multi-party government, people would then have the critical thinking that there will be differences of opinion. Okay, when you have unity, there should be no differences of opinion in a united format. When you come out, you say, we united on this. And this shows that the nomenclature is wrong, because we still have a government and it is not united on the issue of the budget. Okay, and nobody can say, oh, but you said you are united. What is happening here? If you label it properly, that it's a multi-party democracy, even South Africans will understand that now you have to convince South Africans things have to make sense. You can no longer say, I have the majority. I've been told in 5 years, so I can do as I please. And 6 months before the next election, I say nice things to the people without having done anything for the people in the previous 4.5 years. This is the opportunity that it gives. But when they cannot agree, they still, and they have a duty that they have to fulfill for parliament, which is bring a budget to be debated by parliament. If they have not pre-cancelled, they need to come to parliament and tell us that, sorry, I'm here as the Minister of Finance and I do not have a budget to present for the following reasons. There's disagreements on certain aspects of the budget, and until we find each other, we can't come with that budget. The question becomes, if they can't find each other, would they not have a duty to come to the House to say, we can't find each other on this and that? This is what I'm proposing as a minister. Please let the House vote on what I'm putting on the table. Because remember, in a democracy, when they sit out there and they cannot agree inside and they bring it to the House, they might have the numbers from the House.
Which is how politics should work.
With the budget. This is how we should. This is what we should.
This is how politics should work. But the
that's the point. That we are even watching. At that point, they should have had the sense of duty to bring the disagreement to the House.
And they failed us by not doing that. I agree with you. You and I are in violent agreement that they failed us by not doing that.
That there has to be a respect for parliament, which was not shown in this instance. And going forward, I hope that's part of the lesson, and that's what South Africans need to understand. That Doctor, we are not rubber, this new parliament, and we're absolutely not MPs that rubber stamp. We MPs that engage. And as Action SA, we will deal with issues on a case-by-case basis, on the merits of the matter, not on an ideological basis.
If you were the Minister of Health, as that is what you were put forward for, as the health expert within the Action SA portfolio, if you were the Minister of Health today, what would be the first three things that you would do to fix the system? How would you fix the system if you were Minister of Health?
The thing I would do is to tell South Africans that my priority would be to fix the public healthcare system so that it can be accessed for no payment at the point of service by all citizens of the country. And I emphasize that because when you go on oversights, our public healthcare facilities will not cope if they are open to all of Africa. We now have to respect and prioritize citizens and deal with people that are not citizens on international law, using international law. So either the Freedom Charter is found wanting or is being misrepresented. When the notion that things are for all who live in it are not defined as talking about rights for all citizens, equality for all citizens, and it now becomes for all humanity, it is not affordable. I cannot, as a Minister of Health, say I'm going to build a healthcare system for the world. It becomes an unfundable mandate. When you have issues where you are told that in this maternity unit, more than 50% of the mothers that are delivering here are not South Africans, if you do not address that, you got no chance of rebuilding our public healthcare systems. If you are openly inviting everybody from elsewhere and you are sitting as lawmakers in a lager called private health, created by law called the Medical Schemes Act. That is unethical. That is a crime against the citizens. So one of the issues would be, I would be there as a minister to serve the citizens of this nation. And we will have a humanitarian approach. But citizens will be prioritized. And I cannot be a minister of the world or a minister of the continent. Then it is not workable. So until that is sorted out, the issues of long queues, waiting times, overcrowding, overworked workers, a system that is feeding on itself, will not be sorted out. So just understand. So people then have this notion of saying, you know, Action SA is xenophobic. No, Action SA is not xenophobic. Action SA says citizenry should matter. Action SA says uphold the rule of law. Secure our borders. Those that are here must be here legally. We uphold international laws. We uphold aspects of the Constitution that says nobody will be denied emergency treatment. With people that are not citizens, that are collecting chronic medications from our healthcare system, that is unaffordable, that is not sustainable. So you have to understand that there are aspects, whether they are of interpretation of the Freedom Charter, that are making this country ungovernable now. And as a key issue, unless you address that, then healthcare is not fundable. If you create an NHI and you have this thing that is going to save all who live in it, it can be done. We are destroying our own country by trying to be international darlings without providing services to our citizens.
I think that is a good place to leave it. Dr. Jose Letlape from Action SA and a member of the Portfolio Committee, a member of Parliament and a member of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Thank you so much for your time and your insight and your amazing brain. And
thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for your love for this country and for agreeing to serve in this capacity.
Yeah, I love this country and I love humanity and I serve all of humanity. But there has to be nationhood, and a nation that doesn't serve its citizens, that tries to become an international darling at the expense of its citizens. I mean, the fact that we have children that are starving in the Eastern Cape is a shame, and all of us should find it unacceptable.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Thank you for your time, and I hope you have a productive day going forward.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Wonderful. So yeah, you we're in your hands. What do we do next?
Right.
Doctor, that was amazing. Yeah.